sex is what I'm going to talk about. But in the context of a chapter in the Bible that makes a lot of people upset. In fact, the author of the book gives some people a lot of problems. You know, Paul, the apostle. There are people who don't like him for a lot of reasons. He had some hard things to say, and in some cases he even said he got it from the Lord. That makes it even tougher because you're not arguing with Paul anymore. And this chapter has a couple of statements like that. This I got from the Lord. And another time he says, I didn't get this from the Lord, but I believe I have the Spirit of God, and I'm telling you something you need to know. Let's take a look at this book, of this chapter, because it speaks to a number of categories. It speaks to single people, widows, it talks about the married folk, and it talks about the married folk who have unbelieving mates, or we call them believers and unbelievers. Everybody is covered in this chapter because of the very first verse. Now, unfortunately, the King James guys, King Jimmy's boys, did not construct this correctly. It is a question that was being asked. There's no question mark there, so we think, we don't know, well, did they make a statement? Did they ask a question? Other translations correct the problem and tell you that a question was asked by the Corinthian church. Now, if you can picture putting the Corinthian church in our modern times, they would have video machines at home, playing all kinds of things on it. They would have triple X, R-rated, you know, X-rated places to go. They would have nightclubs. And in fact, if you were a good worshiper at the Temple of Diana, you could go there and have connubial bliss. Sex in your worship. So this was a place not unsimilar to New York, San Francisco, Chicago, and maybe even where you live. So he says to them, now, to deal with the questions you wrote about, note the plural, questions. And he capitalized the questions in this category. Is it good for a man to keep away from women? There's a flip side to the question that's implied. Is it good for women to keep away from men? It's all in there. You ask one side of the question, the other side is automatically there. What do you think? Now, some of you say, you're absolutely right. Or avoid it at all costs. I mean, you know. And the men always say, well, can't understand it. Of course, you can't live with them and you can't live without them. You know, there's a lot of feeling and questions that we have about it. And Paul wades into the fray to address the question. Is it good? Now, we know what happened in the garden, don't we? God says it is not good that man should be alone. I will make something so that he will not be alone, and that something will be made of him, of his flesh, and they two will become one. So right from the beginning, God sets up a pattern that he wanted to establish. But by the time of Paul, and especially during our time, questions arise. The conflicts develop. The battle lines are drawn, and the competitive headbutting that goes on in male-female relationships take over. Every one of us has experienced that, even in the first grade. I remember, the first fight I ever had was like in the fourth grade. I lost. This girl hit me with a left hook. And the next thing I knew, I was on the ground. I didn't see it coming. And she became a good friend after that, you know. She was a great friend. I wanted her on my side. But from the conflict of that age, you know, the fellas don't like girls and the girls think the guys are silly and crazy. You know, we've all experienced it. And we carry those games all the way into adulthood. And for a brief moment in Camelot, we fall in love and we say, I do. And then we wonder why we did that. You know, we all go through that. Paul addresses the issue. Now, in drafting this particular chapter and probably dictating it to a secretary who wrote it down, it's a little disjointed. That is, he talks about different things at different times and with all a general purpose in mind. For instance, if he were talking to us today, he probably would have started out just as he did it and address the issue of the married people first in dealing with this subject, sex, because it may have been the predominant category of people. Like I look out here today, and most of you are married or have been married, or let's put it this way, are married. And so he addresses it in the very second through the seventh verse, and he talks about, instead of using the category sex in marriage, let's call it intimacy in marriage. Now, we all know that from the time of the garden, intimacy or sex was used as a weapon. You know that, don't you? Surely you know that. Do you think that Adam ate the fruit because, well, okay, Eve, you said so? Do you think that? You'd think that she may have said something like, Adam, you remember last night? If you don't eat this, there will be no more last nights. Do you think that's a possibility? Now, if you don't think that's a possibility, that's okay, because it's not written in the scriptures, but what was the pull she had over him to eat it? Because the Bible says he was not deceived. He was not deceived. The New Testament tells you that. Adam was not deceived. So what motivated him to please his wife to eat something that God said don't do? What was the power? Paul puts a spotlight on it right here. Let's read it. I'm reading in the Jewish translation. Well, because of the danger of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife, I love that King James wording, due benevolence. What in the world is that? Does that mean take an offering? A benevolent offering of some kind? The husband should give to his wife what she is entitled to in the marriage relationship. That encompasses everything. And the wife should do the same to her husband, or for her husband. The wife, and these statements coming up now are very difficult for us, is not in charge of her own body. Nobody going to tell me what to do. Now, I'm an American. I got my rights. Under the Constitution, I can say no if I want to. Don't we say that? Don't we operate like that? This is my body. You can't tell me what to do with my body. So Paul comes along with this hard statement. And I don't know where he gets it. It seems to indicate Christ had something to do with it. But let's go on. The wife is not in charge of her own body, but don't get excited, men. But her husband is. Likewise, the husband is not in charge of his own body, but his wife is. Therefore, he goes on to say, do not deprive each other except for a limited time by mutual agreement, and then only so as to have extra time for what purpose? For prayer. But after you have gone through that period of spiritual searching and prayer and closeness to God, come together again. Otherwise, because of your lack of self-control, you may succumb to the adversary's temptation. I'm giving this to you as a suggestion, not as a commandment. Actually, I wish everyone were like me. But each has his own gift from God, one this and another that. It's a strong suggestion because they ask the question. And the problem that comes is when you go to a minister and say, well, now, what do you think about this? And he gives you some counsel and advice. You don't have to do it, but boy, oh boy, you shouldn't have asked. You really shouldn't have. I mean, God is kind of taking a look at that situation. If this individual you conclude to be a minister of God, he's going to want to know how you're responding to it. So here Paul talks about a situation where the question in a sexual or sensual society was prevalent in their minds. What should we do? Should we refrain from touching women or touching men or having relationships? And immediately he addresses the question that arises in marriage so that he could eliminate the weapon, punishment. I'm mad at you right now. I don't like the way you've been doing and saying and so forth. You have upset me. Therefore, I'm punishing you for, oh, 6, 7, 8, 9 months. You know what I'm talking about. He addresses that. Now, examine that context of those five verses, 2 through 7. 2 through 7. So that you will see if you can relate it if you are in the marriage state. Next, he addresses his concern to single people and widows. I was always amazed in my early years in the church in going to Big Sandy to the feast to note the happy hunting ground environment. People in a hurry to get married. I was one of them. You see, I had to get married in order to go to Ambassador College, so I wanted to go down there where the colored women were. And Chicago was another place. I think I met a lot of people in Chicago because they had a black congregation there, and I just go over from Detroit and get to hunting because I was single, and one of the requirements to go to Ambassador College as a black man in those days, you had to be married, so I was going to qualify in that area, and so I went to check it out. Paul here tells us, now to the single people and to the widows, I say that it is fine if they remain unmarried, like me. Oh, it's fine, but we ought to get married, right? I mean, it just should be high on the list of priorities of things to do. Let's do it. He says, well, you don't have to marry. You can be like me. But if you can't exercise self-control, they should get married because it is better to get married than to keep burning with sexual desire. I don't know if that was my real problem. I really don't know if that was it. Or the pressure to qualify to go to Ambassador College. Maybe it was equal. I don't know. But that is a problem with single folk. Is it not? It's a problem with married folk burning with sexual desire. But if you're in the category of single or widow, widower, do you need to marry? Why? You're alone or you want to share your life? What's the motivation Paul is addressing at this point? If it is a gift to you to remain single, why cave in to the pressure? See, there was a lot of pressure in those days among young folk in general to get married, you know, and in the church. The pressure at Ambassador College that I observed, you know, just kind of being around it was unbelievable on the student population and the manipulation of marriages and the planning and fabricating of marriages were just staggering to the mind. And the kinds of creativity that the student body had to go through to hide or cover up what their real intentions were. You know, like they had made their selection from the freshman year, who they were going to marry, and of course you couldn't date the person that you were going to marry more than once a semester, was it, Larry, or something like that, once a semester, and then you couldn't really date pursuant to marriage until the second half of your senior year. Yeah, it was crazy, but that was the way it was. And the student body had to deal with it. But the pressure to get that right mate and to go charging off after graduation to whatever assignment you may have had to start your life was unbelievable. The pressure in society, even though there was a time in our society, of course, when it was just great to live together, and a certain amount of people still do that, but the pressure is there from parents. When are you going to get married? I want some grandchildren. You know, that kind of thing. I'd like to have hear the pitter-patter of your children's little feet, because I could always send them home with you after I've enjoyed them for a while. Well, Paul addresses to these people about the single marriage state, but that's not the only place he talks about it. Turn over with me to verse 25. And he continues. This is why I say it's disjointed the way it's organized here. He says, now the question about the unmarried. I do not have a commandment from the Lord. We'll read when we go back about the commandment from the Lord that he said he had. Now this one he says, I don't have a commandment from the Lord. But I offer an opinion as one who by the Lord's mercy is worthy to be trusted. And you have to consider that. You have to weigh that statement very carefully. I suppose that in a time of stress like the present, it is good for a person to stay as he is. That means that if a man has a wife, he should not seek to be free of her. And if he is unmarried, he should not look for a wife. He's talking about the present distress, the situation as it existed in Corinth at that time. There was an anticipation of the heightening disintegration of the society, and perhaps we are considering some of that tonight, now, and the economic structure of things. It's certainly perhaps not as bad as it can get, but one should consider and count the cost whether it would be beneficial, if it would be wise to go pursue a change of one's status at such a time as stress. It goes on to say, but if you marry, you do not sin, verse 29. And if a girl marries, she does not sin. He wants to make that certain, that if you have to, there's no problem. It is just that those who get married will have the normal problems of married life. And what are they? Finances, children, the cares of providing for a household, the cares of providing for the home and all that goes with it. Paying the bills, you know, coordinating one's life, the normal problems, communication. That's what will happen. It's promised. And I would rather spare you. What I am saying, brothers, is that there is not much time left, and that's the way they viewed it at that time. From now on, a man with a wife should live as if he had none. Now, what does he mean by that? To live as if you had none. Times were very difficult. Doesn't mean he should not take care of her. Doesn't mean anything like that. But you've got to kind of live light in the saddle, ready to go. The concept at the time was that the conditions were going to be so bad that you're going to have to be flexible and move quickly. And that's how he lived his life, of course, ready to move at a moment's notice. And he's only trying to relate to them to be ready for whatever might happen. And those who are sad should live as if they weren't. He's talking about a general category now. Maintaining sadness in the face of difficulty and stress, don't do it. Those who are happy, as if they weren't. Those who deal in worldly affairs, as if not engrossed in them, because the present scheme of things in this world won't last much longer. What I want is for you to be free of concern. An unmarried man, therefore an unmarried woman, concerns himself and herself with the Lord's affairs, how to please the Lord. But the married man concerns himself with the world's affairs, with how to please his wife. and he finds himself split or divided. Likewise, the woman who is no longer married, or the girl who has never been married, concerns herself with the Lord's affairs, with how to be holy, both physically and spiritually. But the married woman concerns herself with the world's affairs, with how to please her husband. All that he is saying is, look, if you get married, you're going to have to divide your time. You're going to have to divide your time. If you do that, and this is talking to the singles now, if you get married and you used to spend all of your time serving the Lord, guess what? It won't work like that. There was a lady I heard about. You know, she was at church all the time. And I'm talking about a church in the world now. I'm just using this example. You know, they have prayer meetings on Wednesday night and Bible studies on other nights and other things going on at the church. The pastor came to her one day and said, now, you're married, aren't you? Yes, yes, pastor, but I've got to do the Lord's work. And my husband, well, he's just going to have to take a back seat. And he said, you better go home or he won't be there. You better go home and take care of your husband because he's not going to be there. When you are in this situation of marriage, you have to rightly divide your time. And that is a challenge. How do you do it? Paul knew that that was the case. If a person is single and has no encumbrance with marriage, naturally he can devote all of his time because he doesn't have to answer to anybody. Doesn't have to respond to anybody. Doesn't have to share his time with anyone. But if you are married, you must divide the time. It says split. You must be divided. You must split your time and your focus and your interest. And that's where the conflict arises sometimes, even when you are in the same church. And ministers, of course, run into this and have historically because of the demands on their time. But we must try to understand in the context in which he's saying this, and if we can relate it to now as far as the present distress, fine. But the principle is, okay, you are single, what's on your mind? Getting married? Well, it may be that you should marry, but think about it. Is it necessary? He will make a statement later on that we'll read that may apply to you, or it may not. But honestly evaluate your circumstance, rather than simply do what you think is expected. Then the next category he talks to are the married people, verse 10. Married people staying married. And that is always a hard one. It says, and this one, he makes no bones about where he gets this one. To those who are married, verse 10, I have a commandment. Not a suggestion, not an opinion. And it is not from me, but from the Lord. This one is difficult. And he gets it out of Matthew 19, you know, or whether he quotes it out of Matthew 19, he says it's from the Lord, but we know that Christ talked about it in Matthew 19. And this is what he says. A woman is not to separate herself from her husband. This is not Paul talking. This is Christ talking. But if she does separate herself, she is to remain single or be reconciled with her husband. Also, a husband likewise in the same way should not leave his wife. That is tough, is it not? Because we live in a society, even though divorce rates are decreasing, I don't know if it's because people are not marrying or they're just living together or they're marrying later in life or whatever it is, but the statistics show that there's a decline in divorce in the country, which is good. But there still is a lot of divorce, and seemingly more so in the church than ever before. Now, if we dismiss Paul here, we dismiss Christ, do we not? And that is dangerous. Just in case, though, Paul goes on to address a category whereby a person is not under bondage. We'll get to that in a moment. But let's not run away from these particular scriptures here. We could go back to Matthew 19. I'll just refer to it, where Christ is addressing this issue of divorce. And he says, from the beginning, it wasn't so. It was never the intention that people be separating and divorcing and setting up different households and all that kind of thing. It just wasn't intended to be that way. But it's so easy today with the states that have no-fault divorce to just say, well, that's it. I'm out of here. To go on down the road because it's easy. It wasn't so easy in the last society to do that. Now, I'm talking as one who's been through it, and it was not very pleasant. And the residuals from it are ongoing, even though my wife and I have remarried after 7.5 years of divorce. I testify to this fact that it shouldn't be something that is so easily done. A lot of hurt comes out of it, and a lot of difficulty that should not be, and especially if there are children involved. But Christ says it should not be so. But if you do, forget that. Forget the sex. You're going to live alone. Forget it. If that's important to you, you have said, I'm going to live alone for Christ. I'm going to be as if I were single, but with no desire to marry. That's exactly what he's saying. And that may be difficult. But if you got to do that, be reconciled. Not open your eyes wider to see what's out there. See what's available. Sorry. Very clear in the scriptures here about that. Well, he goes on then to a category because there was a recognition that was not present with Christ. When Christ talked about Matthew 19 concerning marriage and that Moses had permitted divorce because of the hardness of their heart and that from the beginning it was not so, Paul had to deal with a category that had arisen as a result of the church's development that Christ never had to address. That begins or continues in verse 12. To the rest, I say, that is, now there's a category. He talked to the married folk who were married in verses 2 through 7. Then he talked to those who were single. And so now he's going to talk about the rest. And he's going to identify who the rest is. To the rest I say, and notice this, I, not the Lord. And some would dismiss it because, the Lord didn't say it. But Paul was later to tell you why you should consider what he's saying. If any brother has a wife who is not a believer, and she is satisfied to go on living with him, he should not leave her. Can't have the excuse, she doesn't believe. She eats bread during the days of unleavened bread, She eats pork. She won't fix it for me, but she does these kind of things. She doesn't really observe the Sabbath. She's cleaning the house on the Sabbath, doing the kinds of things that you would like maybe her to adjust not to do. But she's happy to live with me. Should I drop her like a hot potato? Paul says, don't do it. If she is satisfied to go on living with, if she is satisfied to live with him, he should not leave her. Now also, if a woman has an unbelieving husband who is satisfied to go on living with her, pays the bills, creates a nice environment for her, in fact, drives her to the feast, does all the kinds of things that a supportive husband would do, she should not drop him like a bad habit, is what Paul is saying. That is difficult to say because we have these feelings that get going within us. You hurt me. You hurt my feelings. You don't listen to me. You don't understand my point of view. And as a result of that, we so easily move towards a separation of a family and a marriage. It goes on to say, for the unbelieving husband has been sanctified or set aside by God by the wife, and the unbelieving wife has been sanctified or set aside for God by the brother. Otherwise, your children would be unclean. But as it is, they are set aside or sanctified by God as a result of the marriage of an unbeliever and a believer. Doesn't matter who is who. God sanctifies that marriage and the children and all of that as a result of one believer in the equation. But, it says, if the unbelieving spouse separates himself, let him be separate. In circumstances like this, or like these, ones that Christ never addressed, never came up, the church had not developed at the time that Christ was talking about marriage. But here is this category now of people that came into existence. If in circumstances like these, the brother or sister is not enslaved or under bondage, as the King James has it. God has called you to a life of peace. The unbeliever leaves, not satisfied to dwell, you're free. Very clear, very precise is what he's saying here. For how do you know, it goes on to say, wife, whether you will save your husband? I mean, that is, if you have an unbelieving husband, you could be the cause for God calling them. And how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? Of setting the right example, of providing in an environment whereby God can sanctify them and serve them. And these are hard sayings, very difficult. And it all drew out of a general question of, should a man not touch a woman? Should a woman not touch a man? And Paul goes through to examine all of these categories. The married people who are relatively happy married, the single people who have a desire maybe to be married, the married people with an unbelieving mate. He examines it all for the purpose of trying to illuminate that larger question of what kind of intimacy should we have in our society, in our Christian society. And it comes thundering down to us today that we need to consider these verses and consider what Paul had to say. He says to them what was important. We read it already in verses 29 through 34. He told them what was important, what they should consider in determining whether they should change their state of being. Should they marry? If you do, you haven't committed a sin. You haven't done the wrong thing. Now let's, I'm reading from this small print, and I tell you, Mr. Watkins already told me that I'm going to have to just give in and get the bifocals. I'm just going to have to do it. Oh, did I hear a sigh like, oh, and like, that's just too bad? Well, it comes to all of us, I think. Okay, let's see. Let's continue in verse 17. And this is where he talks about the state in which we were called. Only let each person live the life the Lord has assigned him and live it in the condition he was in when God called him. That's a tough statement there, you know, because, boy, I sure want to be married. Paul, are you saying I shouldn't? Let's read on. This is the rule I lay down in all the congregation. Was someone already circumcised when he was called? He's using an analogy or connection or an example here to show what he's talking about. Was someone already circumcised when he was called? Then he should not try to remove the marks of his circumcision. Was someone uncircumcised when he was called? He shouldn't undergo uncircumcision. Or shouldn't undergo circumcision, it should read. Being circumcised means nothing. It's, by analogy, he's saying being married means nothing. That's the point that he's making. I mean, if you were married, it doesn't raise your level of standard in the community. Or if you're unmarried, it doesn't diminish your standard or status in the community. What does mean something is keeping God's commandments. Each person should remain in the condition he was in when he was called. This is something that he wanted to permeate that particular society because of the present condition. We may not be at such a state, and I would be the first one to say that I'm not about to say that people should just go march on down the road and not consider a marriage if you're single or if you're in the category where you can marry. Some of us are not in that category. Were you a slave when you were called, goes on to say, well, don't let it bother you, although if you can gain your freedom, take advantage of the opportunity. For a person who was a slave when he was called is the Lord's freedman. Likewise, someone who was a free man when he was called is a slave to the Messiah. You were bought with a price, so do not become slaves of other human beings. Ooh. Brothers, let each one remain with God in the condition in which he was called. That's why he went on then to address the unmarried after this point, to say, look, if you get married, you're going to have to divide your time. Now, before you were married, you could serve the Lord. You could even go and visit the sick. You could volunteer your time in efforts of service to the community, whether it was visiting hospitals or doing such things like that. You even had time to pray and fast and study. But now, if you're female, you got to cook and clean. Or if you're a sensitive man, cook and clean. You know? And you have to divide your time, and your time is going to be occupied in how to please the other individual. Where's the Lord in all of that? Where is he? You know, he's saying, well, okay, I'll wait my turn. Is that what's happening? That's what Paul was talking about in this chapter when he's dealing with remaining in a certain state of being, that if you have been active serving God, serving his purpose, serving the community of saints, it's going to change if you change your status. But he goes on to tell him it's not evil if you should do that. Let's read on about that down in verse 35. He says, I'm telling you this for your own benefit, not to put restrictions on you. And that's what most people read this chapter think. Well, Paul is just restricting us. No, I'm not trying to restrict you. I am simply concerned that you live in a proper manner and serve the Lord with undivided devotion. And you have to consider the fact that that's how he operated. And that's the perspective he came for, and that he wished people had the same gift that he had. But Christ even said that not all men have this gift in Matthew 19. He pointed that out himself. Now, if a man thinks he is behaving dishonorably by treating his fiancée this way, that is, not marrying her, and if there is a strong sexual desire so that marriage is what ought to happen, then let him do what he wants. He is not sinning. Let them get married. You have to honestly evaluate that. Some people just don't have a very high sexual desire, you know, they just don't. They're motivated by other things. Other things bring them far more excitement. Mental stimulation, because after all, that's where sex takes place, you know, up here. We think it happens somewhere else, but it's up here. And so a lot of stimulation can come up here from a lot of other different things, and so people can do that. They can have other interests. They can enjoy an area like this and come away exhilarated, tingling, all those things that is supposed to do. That is so temporary, you know. But if this is a strong thing for you, within you and your genetic makeup, you would not sin to marry, he tells these individuals. But if a man has firmly made up his mind, and if a woman has firmly made up her mind, being under no compulsion, but having complete control over his will, if he has decided within himself to keep his fiancée a virgin, not to marry her, he will be doing well. If you marry, and you've got the motivation to marry, fine. If you have self-control, why marry? Why do it, he says. So the man who marries his fiancée will do well, and the man who doesn't marry will do well. That is powerful stuff. And it's very difficult. I can't help but relate the fact that, I have to go back now to talking about how I was. When I came into the church in Detroit in 1966, I was 19 years old. And it was in this time of the year, the spring holy day season. And I looked around, and there were two black ladies. One was 7 years older than I was. Looked good, too. And then there was one about my age. Well, can't do anything there. So let's try, let's see what's happening over here with this category, this other individual. And she played the piano, and she accompanied me for special music and so forth, but we were just friends. There was not that spark flying type of thing. So let's catch the Greyhound to Chicago. Because I hear that there's a congregation over there of all these black folk. And there must be somebody over there for me, so I'm taking the bus, and I'm getting over there. And it's amazing when you have this great desire to get married. You come in, your eyes are... Ooh, let's see here. It's like a candy shop, you know? Trying to figure out what you're going to do. Now, let me tell you, the motivation was improper. It was wrong. As a result of it, and I'm telling on myself now, as a result of it, I did eventually meet a young lady from the Chicago area, and we began writing. I met her before I moved to Pasadena, so we had this correspondence going back and forth. And we ostensibly became engaged through this letter writing. So the following feast, we were going to meet in Big Sandy, and I had bought a ring and all of that, you know, and Tom Justice would remember her because she used to be his secretary. In fact, she came to Pasadena to work at the press because of me. I won't mention her name. But anyhow, it was one of those deals where we're going to get married and I'm just going to be qualified to go to Ambassador College. And the thing was, it was the wrong person. It was just wrong. She was in the church. It must be right. Wrong. Wrong divorce breath. You know, it was just wrong. But this motivation, you know, the wrong perspective. And this is what Paul is addressing to the single people. What should be most important to you when you are called? Isn't it serving the Lord? Would he not provide that which you know? I heard one preacher say, Christ has a wife or mate for you that you perhaps haven't even met yet. And here you are trying to cozy up to somebody because, well, she's about the right height. You know, the blood is running warm in her veins. You know, and she's in the church. It's got to work. Wrong. Wrong. It doesn't work like that. So I made that mistake at that time, but fortunately, we didn't get married. But I tell you, I just didn't learn from that because, see, I'm telling on myself, right? You know, don't hold this against me, but I'm sharing it with you as an illustration about the single folk because we have some of those, you know. And they get together in these single meetings, you know, like this. You know, the happy hunting grounds. Yep. I'm sharing it with them. The married folk, you are all set, and you are just living perfect lives, so you just tune me out of this. But the single folk, you know, I mean, here's what I did. Okay, I got to Pasadena in L.A., and that situation didn't work out, so I began scoping the territory again. And there was a nice young lady there in the Los Angeles area, and I probably made her drop her teeth when I wrote a letter to her and said, would you marry me? Because she was in the church. She was a leaning young person in the community there in the church. And surely, this is going to work. But we talked about that, and her mother was a deaconess and all that. We sat down and talked about it. It was wrong. Wrong motivation. It was not, I was not involving myself with someone on the basis of the feeling, the connection between us and the communication between us, but just to qualify for something that was not important. I thought it would make me more valuable in service to Christ. But what Paul was saying is, serve him where you are. You're single? Serve him like that. Put him first, and he will add to you that which you desire. That's a big lesson. But hard when you've got this stuff flowing around in your veins. I mean, it really is. It kind of clouds everything. And especially in a society where it's so prevalent, that's what was happening in Paul in Corinth. They said, well, should we touch a man and touch a woman? It's an issue here in this community. And Paul went on in great detail to address it. So I shared those examples with you. Of course, obviously, eventually I did get married and chose the wife, and we re-chose and all of that kind of thing. But even then, we have to learn. We had to learn through that initial choice of what was important, what was to be the thing to do, because it presents you with new options and new territory to cover when you take on a husband and take on a wife, and your attention becomes divided. He says, kind of in a summation, in verse 39, a wife is bound to her husband, and by contrast, a husband is bound to her wife. A husband is bound to his wife as long as he or she lives. Boy, that's hard. But if the husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes, provided he is a believer in the Lord. Now, some have successfully married someone who was not a believer in the Lord. Rarely. But it has happened. Paul knew the caution, and he put it in. And we should be cautious as well. However, in my opinion, she will be happier if she remains unmarried. And in saying this, I think I have God's Spirit. No, you don't, Paul. I'd be happier if I was married. You would not sin if you married, he said earlier. But he says, I think, judging by the way he lived, that that would work. As I say, this is a difficult chapter. No question about it. Paul wrote some hard things in this particular one, and somebody, you know, have the joke, if you don't play the game, you don't make of the rules. What does Paul know? You know, he was happy being single and traipsing around the countryside. You know, what does he know about what I'm going through? He stated these things from Christ, from his experience, from his opinion, for their consideration over a question they raised. And if you have a similar question, if you have a concern, should I get married? Should I divorce? Should I remain as I am? He covers it all in this particular chapter. And there's something there for each of us. There's something there for whatever status you presently have in your life concerning intimacy when it comes to the expressions in sexual activity in marriage or the avoidance of it outside of marriage. There's something there for each one of us. In a society, in a climate like this, there are people contemplating all kinds of things one way or the other. You must consider whether you are doing the right thing in accordance with fulfilling your responsibility to Christ. I share this with you today because it was one category that was not covered in all of our talks. Marriage was not dealt with, and this was not to be on how to have a happy marriage. It was not on all of the kinds of areas we could talk about in marriage, but it was merely to look at what your state of mind is and state of being is and what you can do within it. If you are single and want to be married, you will not sin. But what will be your motivation? What will be your purpose? And if you do marry to fulfill the sexual desire that is strong upon you, your attention will be divided. And if you are married, you should not seek to separate. That's clearly the word that we've read today. I hope we are guided and motivated by it.